Welcome, everybody, to All About Symbian, Insight Podcast, number 234, recording this on Thursday, the 14th of March, 2013. I'm a very croaky Steve Litchfield. I'm still poorly, but the show must go on. I'm Mr. Rafe Blanford. He's not 100% himself, but he is here.
Yeah, I'm here as well, and yeah, feeling slightly under the weather, but we haven't had a Symbian podcast for a while, so we thought we'd get one out while we had the opportunity to do so.
Yeah, I guess the headline thing I wanted to talk about, Rafe, was a flow of updates, a flurry of updates, the telephony update for the Nokia 808 and other Bell Feature Pack 2 devices, gallery and camera updates, quite significant, also Nokia 808 and other Bell FP2, for the Bell Refresh generation, a SkyDrive upload platform enhancement now available. Is it fair, Rafe, to say that if Nokia hadn't actually outsourced Symbian maintenance to Accenture, we wouldn't actually have had most of these upgrades?
Well, you could say that in one sense, in that I suspect there's a certain amount of, you know, contractual obligation to fix bugs or provide certain features. And is it more certain if you've outsourced that, and presumably there's some kind of contract that provides a provision for, you know, bonuses if it does happen, or perhaps penalties if it doesn't? I think that's maybe being a bit hard on Nokia's internal development teams, because after all, it's the same people developing the software. I mean, the sort of move, or the outsource to Accenture, honestly, it was more about making some of the job losses around, you know, obviously the reducing the amount of money spent on Symbian, the research and development around that, kind of more palatable. Because essentially what has happened is, you know, a whole bunch of people did lose their jobs, but some more were transferred to Accenture, and from Accenture they've either slowly been losing their jobs or transferring over to other things, and what you're left with is probably a relatively small team in Accenture working on these updates. But you know, I would remain optimistic and say I think they would have happened anyway, but it is very noticeable that most of these updates can either be described as minor, you know, function changes or feature updates or bug fixes. But also, I mean, I think one of the interesting things about this is the way they're being delivered through SW Update does kind of say to me that Nokia, in one sense, finally cracked that getting updated software onto devices and being able to update just part of the software or one particular application or something in the background. And it's probably, of all the platforms out there, one of the most effective at doing this, you know, in terms of delivering over-the-air updates of a relatively small size and just doing partial updates. If you look at a way a lot of the other things work, you quite often have fairly sizable updates, or there's kludges or workaround to get it working. So it's sort of the maturity of Symbian thing again. But in all fairness, it took an awfully long time to get here. And I suspect part of the reason it's going so smoothly now is there's kind of less devices, less operator obstacles to worry about. You know, they can put it up on the servers and it will either get nodded through by operators, or in some cases, you know, people, you know, on operator locked devices aren't seeing these. There's sort of mixed messages in some of the comments on the stories we've written. But I think you're maybe being a little too cynical to say they wouldn't have happened. You know, they were kind of on the cards. Honestly, I may be a bit surprised that we've seen as many as we have, and just in the last few weeks we've seen a whole raft of them, and I suspect there'll be a few more to come, because it's part of this, you know, continuing to support the devices mantra that Nokia's talked about in the past.
Yeah, and with that software update comment, you have just derailed my editorial for Monday morning, but don't worry, I shall write it up in more detail.
Well, they're shockingly, they're people that don't listen to the podcast, so I'm sure they'd like to hear the view anyway. But as I say, it's just that solidity of the SW update, and, you know, at least for me, it all went seamlessly. It's all very easy to use. Actually, they deserve a lot of, you know, praise for that, even if it is on a zombie platform.
Yeah. Well, we're now over 2 years since the famous February the 11th and dropping Symbian as the main platform, and we're still seeing these updates, which is really quite heartening. Of those updates I mentioned, the gallery and camera update probably offered for the 808 and the Bell Feature Pack 2 devices, like the 700 and the 701. That's probably adds the most functionality, and you can say, wow, that's a functionality addition. In actual fact, you could also argue that those things should have been in Bell FP2 from the start, and this was merely filling in gaps, and I guess you could argue it from that point of view. So it's not like Accenture have got carte blanche to add feature A, feature B, and feature C. It's feature A, B, and C were missing, and we always meant to get back to it. Can you go back, please, and fill in the gap?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I agree. This one is sort of the most welcome for me of the updates. You know, the fact that the kind of the Facebook upload functionality was there to begin with, and effectively what this does is Well, we then got Flickr and Twitter, and then you've got a way to, essentially, it's to make it easy to choose which one of them you upload to. This update brings in, it's bringing kind of multi-select of photos in and making it easy to share them to those social media services. So I guess you could say it's an enhancement of the long press on a photo from the main gallery of that pop-up menu. And you're right, you know, that was already in place, and it's pretty obvious that that kind of feature, if you like, had already been specified. But nonetheless, you know, welcome the fact there has been this update delivered and you can now use it on the devices. And you know, especially for the camera-centric 808, you know, where I think sharing your creative, you know, results is an important thing, actually it's great because it makes it so much easier to, you know, quickly send out a picture to Twitter or, you know, Facebook or Flickr. I mean, it's not that you couldn't do this before, because, you know, there's plenty of third-party applications and other workarounds. But, you know, this, it's not quite one-touch sharing, but this more seamless sharing. I suspect most 808 people who really want to do this had found a way around it. But it's just one of those short things. You just go, yes, good, I wanted to see this, and it's nice that it's arrived.
Yeah, one thing I've been planning to do for a while is to think, okay, let's approach Symbian and this 808 with these Bell FP2 enhancements we've just been talking about. And with Nokia Social, with all its faults, as it is, and it approach it as a new user now with these updates, using no other social utilities and applications. How functional is it? How usable is it? And it'll be interesting to see how I get on. I'm probably a bit too much of a power Twitter user, but I'm certainly a normal Facebook user and certainly a normal Flickr user. So it could be quite an interesting experiment.
Yeah, I mean, I've looked at that as well. And, you know, previously I was quite, you know, defensive of Symbian, saying, you know, the social stuff is fine. I think the reality is, if you've used it on another platform, you do kind of realise the shortcomings of Symbian in this department. And this update actually goes some way to fixing kind of the media sharing element of that. But you look at the rest of it, and, you know, Nokia Social, it gets the job done. But I wouldn't ever say it's a particularly elegant way to do it when you compare to what's available, you know, elsewhere. And of course, third party on a platform with the likes of Gravity. You know, I think particularly look at the out of the box functionality on Nokia's Windows Phone devices, and how much easier it is to kind of share an image that you've taken on that device. And it's not just, you know, to the social network. You can also do it into various other applications as well. You can see the same ideas in Symbian, certainly, but it's not the kind of quite the same polish. And I mean, I don't think that's the fault of Symbian as such, you know, all the programmers or whatever else. It just reflects kind of the changing nature of how we use smartphones. And, you know, the Symbian way of doing things kind of respects its legacy, or as a result of its legacy, you know, being essentially designed, you know, more than a decade ago. Even if you look at the touch stuff, you know, you can still see some of that. Whereas, of course, you know, Windows Phone and that modern, or that Microsoft design language, you know, that was actually something that came in just a few years, where, you know, the idea of, you know, web on smartphones, social sharing, you know, very strong multimedia credentials, very much there. You know, you think back to, you know, some of the early Symbian devices, you know, it was wild that it had a camera on it, and the idea of sharing things and, you know, web being really big wasn't there. And I just think that has a knock-on effect. So, I mean, yes, I think it'd make for an interesting editorial, but I think even the most hardened Symbian fan would look at their device and go, yes, I acknowledge that kind of the social and particularly the kind of the multimedia sharing features are probably better on other platforms. And part of that's, of course, a result of apps. But you know, the other part of me goes, well, does that really matter? You know, for the 808 user, of course, it's about getting the very best possible image, and that's what you'll get with the 808. And it's still pretty easy to share it to, you know, Flickr, to Facebook, to Twitter. And so I actually think the important thing for them is going to be that image quality, you know, not the exact mechanism with which they get it out to their friends.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, so if you want to check your particular Symbian smartphone, just head into Software Update, either Software Update as it sounds, or SW Update on some devices, and just see what Nokia have got for you, because you may be surprised.
Yeah, we should say there's some camera improvements in that gallery and camera update. I haven't actually been able to spot any differences. I guess the 808 is so good that you're going to be hard.
It's in the UI, Rafe. Yeah, it's not actually in the camera quality.
There we go.
The user interface has been polished, and the reset button's been moved around, and there are some extra tweaks and fiddly bits. So right, maybe
that would explain why I didn't read it. And I probably should have read the comment thread or Steve's article a bit more carefully. But the other update that I think maybe we should mention just a bit more detail, Steve, is the telephony update. some people are reporting that this has helped them get around the kind of the 3G switching glitches that some people had. I haven't seen these, partly because I'm not taking the Edgeway into 3G areas all that much. But again, it's another one of these small updates where it's fixing relatively low-level stuff in the platform, but again, delivered in, you know, a pretty small update. I just think it's encouraging to continue to see that sort of thing happen.
Yeah, I'm also encouraged when an update downloads and says you need to restart your device. Now, people may groan at that, think, oh, no, I'm going to restart my phone. But that means it's actually fixed something quite low level, which means it's doing some good. So that never bothers me at all. Now, other updates. If you go into Nokia Maps on virtually any Symbian smartphone, S65th edition or Symbian 3, Anna, Bell, whatever, go into settings and then map loader and you check for updates and you should find you've got some new maps. Now, Rafe, originally, I think there was something like a 6-monthly schedule, maybe quarterly schedule. And of course, Symbian itself is being deprecated by Nokia, but of course, they're having to maintain Nokia Maps and updating all their base maps and developing it constantly for Windows Phone. Now, are these new updates? I mean, maybe you don't know the answer, but are these new updates for the Symbian Nokia Maps, base maps, are they directly lifted as a result of the work on Windows Phone, or is that, again, part of the maintenance of Nokia Maps by people like Accenture?
I don't have a definitive answer on this, but what I can tell you is the way that the Nokia Maps work, and I don't actually think it's related to Windows Phone. Actually, I think it's more related to the way kind of Nokia's location commerce division works in general. As you kind of mentioned there, there's this continuous program of updating maps. If you look on the Nokia website, you can see some statistics about this, but it's literally, even just in the UK, it's thousands of kilometres, you know, every 6 months, and, you know, road junctions and signs, all of that's being updated, you know, one-way street information, as well as even more kind of dynamic is the place database, which is getting information both from Nokia's cars driving around collecting, but various third parties as well, and the reviews being brought in. So with all of that, it's kind of this constantly updated database that underlies all of Nokia's mapping services and what the various clients do. And this could be a Nokia phone, or it could be from another company, you know, that uses the Nokia mapping data. Microsoft is one of those, a lot of car manufacturers as well, increasing number of websites, and a lot of third-party app providers as well use that map data. And so essentially Nokia issues kind of updates on a, I think, as you said, it's a quarterly basis, and people can then build their own kind of map data off that. And in some cases, I understand there's actually direct links in it as well. You can sort of do even more direct creation of that map data, because what Nokia supply to their, you know, both internal teams, but also to people licensing data, is kind of products of various bits of map data. So someone in the Symbian team will do the necessary to package it up, and actually it probably won't be the Symbian team, it'll probably be someone in the maps team in Berlin. And that will happen for Windows Phone, it happens for Series 40, it happens for Symbian. Now, it may be that there's some commonalities in that packaging. I suspect actually there are some differences that may be optimized for each platform, you know, because obviously some of the data in those, you know, platforms does vary. You know, for example, you know, Symbian may have an extra set of data for traffic or something like that, or Windows Phone may have some extra things to allow the City Lens app to work more accurately. So I don't think they're common packages, but that kind of continuous update process is common to kind of all the Nokia platforms, as I say, Series 40, Symbian, Windows Phone, as well as all the third-party licensees of the data. And so you should see these updates come along. It seemed to have varied from my experience between 3 and 6 months. I can't actually remember when the last Symbian update was, but I noticed this most recent one was just from kind of the middle of February. And as I recall, there was one last summer, so it looks like it might be on roughly the 6-monthly cycle.
I think there was one sometime late last year, November or December.
Okay.
Right? I think
this, so it's a quarterly cycle then.
Yeah, quarterly, which, or 2 months, yeah.
Which is interesting, because that would tie in pretty much with what Windows Phone is. So yeah. I suspect it's a case of, you know, this is, you know, one of Nokia's, you know, crown jewels, if you like. So it makes sense they're looking after it properly. And after all, you know, relatively speaking, it's easy to do this. There will be automated tools, I'm sure, sitting in a Nokia office, and it will be someone's job to build the various map files for each country and then put them on the server, and of course update it for some kind of index file which tells devices when they check for updates whether something new is available. And so it could be that they're using the same data files. I don't actually know. I'll try and get an answer for a future podcast.
Yeah. Speaking of things carrying on working for Symbian, maybe you've got an answer for this one. I'm going to kind of guess. Google Mail and PIM Exchange access to Google Contacts has been continuing to work for me for Symbian. Now, this is not just because we knew that people with an existing Exchange Active Sync connection to Google Contacts, Google Calendar, they just carry on working past the end of January 2013. I know that's going to carry on working. That's fine until I reset my device. But I've also been experimenting, Rafe, and I've been deleting my email account and whatever data on the Nokia E7 here, giving it a day or so to rest, then setting it up as if I was a fresh user, and that setup is still working, even way into March 2013. Now, interestingly, some other people have said, on slightly fresher devices perhaps, or slightly different circumstances, that they haven't been able to get new Exchange Active Sync to Google working. And so there's this kind of mismatch, and I'm not quite sure where I stand. So one of the theories, which sounds plausible, is that for those people's accounts, i.e. my particular Google sign-in, who also have active Windows Phone devices on the go, so it also lets you reset up other devices because it knows your account is kind of authorized, if you like, and part paid for by Microsoft. Whereas if you're totally standalone, a Symbian user, you come along afresh, March 2013, no Windows Phone on the go, then it says, no syncing for you. Does that sound plausible?
If that sounds plausible. Like you, I don't have enough data points to confirm this one way or the other, but I noticed something similar when I was setting a device up from cold, if you like. I suspect it also could be just as simple as, you know, Google will be switching this kind of thing off gradually, and some accounts still have it active and some don't. Obviously, given that there has been an extension for the Windows Phone devices, you know, you imagine there is, you know, some kind of check in there that's allowing for it to be active. And, you know, the explanation that if you've got a Windows Phone device, it kind of switches on Exchange Active Sync functionality does kind of make sense to me. I mean, especially when you bear in mind that Google is also leaving this functionality on the kind of, if you're using email on Google's apps for domains, or if you're kind of paying for the, you know, that so services from Google as a business user, you can continue to get that. So it would be the most logical explanation, but like you, I can't confirm it one way or the other. Of course, you know, the other thing, whenever these kind of services get switched off, it's very rare for it to, you know, be there one day and gone the next altogether, simply because the scale that we're talking about, this is across, you know, many millions of user accounts and many servers or clusters or clouds or whatever you want to call them. And so, you know, a neat switch off point isn't really gonna, you know, necessarily be all that likely. Yeah, of course it depends on the service, but you know, don't count on it at all. If you're a Symbian user, you cannot guarantee by any means that Google Active Sync will continue to work. I mean, talking of Google, there was another interesting piece of news today, which I think of some relevance to Symbian users, is that they're going to be shutting down Google Reader, which is the application or the web app for you reading RSS feeds. I think that's going to affect quite a lot of power users on Symbian who, you know, may well be using one of the Google Reader clients on Symbian as well. So it's another one to watch out for. I'll have to find an alternative method for that. I think that's going to be slightly frustrating, since a lot of the alternatives aren't necessarily going to be geared up to having Symbian clients. There are some good standalone RSS feed readers out there. You can look actually through some of the reviews on the site for those. But it's typical of these services. You can't absolutely guarantee that they'll stay around forever.
Yeah, the Google Reader won't be shutting down if I have anything to do with it. One thing Google has horribly underestimated is who uses Google Reader. I think they're going to be completely taken aback by the outcry. I've been monitoring the feeds over the last 24 hours, and you would not believe the outcry. And basically, okay, they may say Google Reader, this is completely off topic for Symbian, but Google Reader only has whatever it is, 500,000 active users now. That may sound trivial to Google. It was not worth us doing. But those aren't 500,000 normal users. Those are the 500,000 bloggers, journalists, writers, content producers, and influencers who are all at the very top, the top 1% of the internet's savvy people. you really don't want to cheese those people off. And it's a vital tool for the very people who are going to shout the loudest.
Well, I think Google is probably well aware of that, and they'll just put up with a bit of a storm cloud. I mean, the reason they're shutting us down is basically it's not making them any money. So it's not an unreasonable view to take that they shouldn't therefore be running it. I mean, there's exceptions to that kind of rule, of course, all the time in the kind of corporate world. But yes, I think you're right. There will be quite a lot of volume expressed on Twitter and other places. But I think most normal people, it'll bypass them completely, the fact they're not aware of Google Reader. I mean, the big sign of this is the way that Google Reader kind of disappeared from the links at the top of the Google homepage. I think that even happened a couple of years ago when the writing was on the wall. Once kind of some of the sharing functionality got switched over to Google Plus and Plus One-ing. I have to admit I'm annoyed because I use Google Reader every day. It's one of the things I use to keep up to date with all the news that's going on and kind of find interesting things to write about. But there are alternatives out there. As I say, there are a couple of RSS clients out there for Symbian. So if you're looking for a replacement, there's things like NA Reader, for example. Nokia actually have one in Beta Labs. I'm not actually sure that's still available. I know I have it installed on my device, and you'll also find some in the Nokia store as well. So just kind of a heads up that in the summer that will be shutting off, so people might want to be aware of that. I suspect it's a more specialized area than most kind of bloggers and journalists realize. I think a lot of people have switched over to using Facebook and Twitter as their kind of source of news like that. But there's like anything, there's a very strong audience who will be rather annoyed to see it going away. And I think just as there was a bit of fuss over the Exchange Active Sync on the email side, there'll be fuss over this as well.
Yeah, Google are just out to annoy me this year. And not in my good books.
Well, I mean, the other thing that will annoy you in good books, they're also not exactly getting rid of CalDAV support. And this is something we talked about a little while back. But they're switching access to Google Calendar for the most part over to a proprietary Google API, having said that the reason to switch off Exchange Active Sync was all about supporting open standards. So, I think it goes back to what we said at the time, that companies are perfectly entitled to do this, and it's something you have to be aware of when you come to rely on one particular service or one particular company, and why data portability is so important.
Yeah, the Microsoft cloud is looking more and more appealing, I would say. Which brings us, I guess, to an All About Windows Phone podcast later this morning. Anyway,
it does, but maybe we should, talking about Microsoft Cloud, we should talk about SkyDrive, because there's actually something very good Symbian related here.
Well, there's two different stories here. I've got the one about Files Plus. Is that the one you're after?
Well, we can start with File Plus. This is a third-party application, essentially a file manager with cloud functionality built in, and I think it's one of the best value applications, especially for power users, that's available on the Nokia store at the moment.
Yeah, SkyDrive, Google Drive, FTP, WebDAV, Dropbox, they're all integrated. You just sign into each of these storage services and you can drag and drop files, well, not drag and drop, I guess, tap and drop files down to your local disks on the Symbian device. And there's a limited amount of syncing as well. There's some built-in image viewing and various other niceties, and it's continually being upgraded. So if nothing else, and you're into cloud storage and getting online with these various services on Symbian phones, have a look at Files Plus, because it really is the best quid or two you'll ever spend, I think.
Yeah, and with this cloud storage, I will say it's better if you can have kind of a full syncing solution. But in all fairness to Files Plus, it's not really aimed at that. This is kind of a file manager that happens to have cloud integration as well. And in terms of being able to get at your files on the cloud, it works perfectly well. In fact, I mean, if you're just looking to get maybe the odd document across or maybe photos, I think it's a very powerful solution. SkyDrive, for example, if you're using a Windows Phone device as well, that makes a lot of sense. But it's good to see the support for other services, Dropbox or Google Drive, particularly important if you're using an Android device. So it's just a good example of a bit of innovation in the third-party software scene, that's, had a surprising amount of strength over the last, year or so. We actually thought that it would start dropping off. If anything, we've seen some things like this that really impress us, and there's some nice extras in here in terms of, getting the uploads and then being able to see some data about what you're using the various file storage space for, and you can see your free space on your cloud storage as well. So just, recommended from me. And, one of the things I have on my AK08 is the application that allows you to automatically have pictures uploaded to SkyDrive. For me, it's actually a convenient way of being able to quickly get pictures off the phone without really having to think about it. But if I'm on another device and want to access a particular picture, Now, this Fast Plus is actually also a great way to do it, because sometimes I've taken a picture on another device and I want to show it to someone or get it quickly. And that's actually what I was using it for. And while we're talking about SkyDrive, Steve, there was another update. And this was more in the realms of encouraging people to upgrade to Windows 7 or make the process a little painless. But I think it's worth talking about because it's quite a nice solution, really, isn't it?
Were you talking about the Bell Refresh generation getting the SkyDrive uploader?
I was, and I should probably make it clear and say this isn't new altogether. It's new for the older set of devices, but I do think it's relevant because there's a lot of people on those devices who may be thinking about, you know, what comes next for me in device terms. I think a lot of those who are thinking about jumping to the A28 have probably already done so, and it leaves, you know, how do I get my data off my existing device and potentially onto a new one? And we have talked about this before, but maybe we could just summarise again for those who don't remember.
Yeah, well, there was a photo uploader appeared briefly a year or so ago for this Bell generation of devices, which is great, having your photos uploaded to Microsoft Cloud. But they've now they withdrew it, and they're obviously working on it to say, well, we need to really give people an upgrade path to our new Windows phones. Let's also add in contacts, which is the other thing that people really want to move across when they move to a new platform. So this new uploader, which you can find again in the software update, it scans your contacts as well as photos and basically uploads the lot. You do have, for photos, you have to specify actual size if you want to keep full resolution. Otherwise, they're VGA resolution, which is no use to man nor beast. And to note the contacts, there is some kind of intelligent syncing going on in that I've got 800 contacts, only 258 got uploaded. And I'm not sure whether that because A, the software was broken, or B, it only found 258 minor differences between the existing set of contacts in the Windows phone, you know, with the Microsoft Cloud, and what was on my device. So I guess I'm a special case. Because I already have a Windows phone and it's all set up, and my Microsoft Cloud is fairly up to date, maybe I shouldn't be expecting, you know, all 800 uploaded every time. So I guess it is intelligent, but I should just note that the whole thing is rather slow. The scanning and process of going through all your contacts and presumably checking each one against the Microsoft Cloud at Outlook.com or Live.com took, in my case, well over 10 minutes. So it's not something you're going to be doing every day or indeed multiple times a day. This is something you might do either as a one-off when you want to upgrade to a Windows phone, or you know, you're thinking of running out to Windows phone and you've got one to play with, and you do this every 2 or 3 months just to make sure everything's up to date.
Yeah, that's right. As I say, a useful update if you're moving to Windows phone. I would compare it to the kind of the data transfer app that you sometimes use to go from one Symbian device to another. You know, something you only use once to get the data off. Actually, it's a bit unfair on data transfer because that actually allows a certain amount of syncing to go on. But this is kind of a run it once to get, you know, your precious pictures and your contacts off your phone. I suspect an awful lot of people have already got the contacts coming in through something like Exchange Actions or some other sync protocol, and so it'll be less of an issue. But for those that have kind of built up, you know, many hundreds of contacts on their phone over time, you're putting them into the cloud this way is actually a pretty effective way to do it. And the good thing is, once you're in that Microsoft Cloud or the Live Cloud, there are actually various export options, even if you're not going to a Windows Phone device. If you're going to a Windows Phone device, it'll all happen very seamlessly because you'll sign up for that same account when you first start the phone, and those contacts will come down automatically. But even if you're looking at an iPhone or an Android device, it's actually a pretty nice solution for getting things off into the cloud painlessly, where you can then export them in various formats and then import them into whatever your new service, new phone of choice is going to be.
Yeah. One final discussion point before we finish, Rafe. I wrote an article entitled From Scroll and Select to Super Slick, But What If? My contention, and I'm sure you just waiting to weigh in here, my contention is that one of the ways in which it all went wrong for Nokia, and I did write an article on 10 things Nokia did wrong, which you can find on the site a few months back, one of the ways in which it all went wrong is that when Nokia had the choice, and they had to go from S63rd edition to S65th edition, i.e. adding touch, they had two choices. One was to think, okay, scrap the UI, just keep the kernel, keep the central core modules, but basically rework everything for touch, more or less from scratch. It'll take longer, but it'll be better. But that delay in itself might cause problems. Or option B would be to think, okay, let's keep it as much the same as possible. We'll try and replicate the S63rd edition experience, complete with virtual function keys and and moving a highlight around a menu and then tapping it again to select. But and that'll be very familiar to existing users, and we can do it really quickly because it basically emulates the old S63rd edition, but acknowledging that there's probably an awful lot more work to do in the long term. And that, it obviously went for option B, and I would argue that just what if? What would have happened if they'd gone for option A back in 2008 and gone for their all-new system, something like the Bell Feature Pack 2 today? Imagine that appearing on a Symbian device some circa 2009, 2010. I think that might have changed the game.
Yeah, well, as time goes by, I guess we'll see more and more of this kind of, you know, look back and wonder what might have happened. And we actually talked about this, I can remember, at the time, you know, what was the best method to go forward. You know, and people were probably going, why on earth did they choose, you know, if essentially, as you put it, a continuation. The reason for it was there were, you know, 100 million plus devices out there using the, you know, the old system, if you like. And of course, the market context wasn't that obvious. The iPhone had been introduced, but it hadn't sort of become all dominant. And, you know, Android hadn't really been thought about. You know, bear in mind, this, you know, we're going back quite a bit in time here. Yeah. And actually, it just goes to show how quickly things have changed. And so it was thought that kind of keeping things familiar for existing users was actually more important than really pushing back the barriers. I think in hindsight, yes, I absolutely agree. This is where, you know, the UI experience at least went wrong. I mean, you can talk about other Symbian issues, but, you know, obviously the kind of UX is one really important issue. And actually, it's also, I guess, tied in with the fact that Symbian actually kind of lost control of the UX to Nokia and various other partners. So we had, you know, Sony Ericsson with UIQ, Nokia had Series 80 and Series 90 as well. And you can't help but wonder, you know, if Symbian had a few more resources and kept control of the UI, would it be more centralized? Could more development have been done there? You know, and there were, you know, factions within Nokia fighting between the various UIs. And it was an extremely political situation, certainly from the people I've spoken to about, explain, you know, a clash between the various teams. And actually, you know, if you look at, you know, what might have been, I think Series 90, which was descended from Hilden UI, which is something that Cyan had originally worked on, and might have become the main Symbian UI, had an awful lot of potential, was a long way ahead of its time. You get it out today, you can recognize many of the things that have become standard. But of course, you know, Series 60 was the mass market thing, and that's what Nokia wanted to push, getting smartphones into as many people's pockets as possible. And so you did have what was essentially a fairly ugly kludge, and, you know, we said as much at the time. But actually, a lot of people thought, no, this was the right way to do things. And actually, if you think back to the very first of those Nokia Touch devices, you know, the 5800 and its brothers and sisters, it wasn't nearly as smooth as Steve has pointed out, as Bell is now, with the sort of scroll and set being a lot more obvious. Things weren't nearly so touch friendly. You know, it was very obvious its heritage coming from, you know, a non-touch screen device. You still get that in the Symbian devices today, but now, you know, it's less recognisable. The legacy stuff, I think, comes in elsewhere. It's really the thinking behind the platform as much of the UX patterns, although that's still important. And yes, it did have a really bad effect. But I think hindsight is a pretty helpful tool in this particular case, as it probably always is. And so, you know, to say it should have been done differently, yes. But it's, you know, it's not the way things worked out. And I'm not sure it would have been any other way. I mean, a lot of it was down to kind of, I think, some of the conservatism of the Nokia management teams. You know, there was a concentration not on sort of, can we create this great new experience or great new product? You know, how can we continue our current success? Because make no mistake, you know, Symbian and that scroll and select UI were tremendously successful. They'd taken the smartphone from being kind of a very educated thing to something that was really becoming kind of mass market and popular. You know, think back to the N95 and how much of an impact that had. You know, this amazing device that had GPS built in, a 5-megapixel camera, you know, a big screen, was able to do all the thinking. It was kind of the dream of convergence realized in a very real way. But of course, the market moved on incredibly quickly. And I'm not sure it would have been possible to get, you know, a completely new UX built in the amount of time that kind of that gap in the market. And it could, of course, just as much damage trying to do that. I mean, you also have to bring in, of course, Nokia's Linux efforts here with MIMO, which was kind of running side by side, and that was kind of seen as the future. I mean, even back then, there was an acknowledgement that Symbian, you know, might have, you know, a limited time shift. I don't think at that particular point in time, but, you know, they're always looking ahead to the future and saying, you know, what's going to be the next thing. And I think a Linux platform and some of the experiments that were done around them, I mean, they were also tied back by some of the Symbian teams. I think you look at the early internet tablets, the 800 and the 810, it's well known, even, you know, despite all the secrecy around those, that, you know, essentially the Symbian teams blocked that from having a cellular radio, i.e. being able to be a phone, and that continued on, and that kind of, that being dragged down is one of the reasons a lot of the MeeGo and the MeeMo fans sort of say that didn't get the chance it should have done. It's very easy to talk about this and sort of assign blame all over the place, but, you know, it's kind of history now. But I do think you make an important point here, that there was essentially a big change in the way that phones worked, and it was the move to the touchscreen. And I think it overlays something I was saying earlier in the podcast. You know, it was a change in what people were using devices for as well. I've talked about this before and said, you know, the emphasis moved from phone to smart. And, you know, Symbian was a platform that put the emphasis on phone and less on smart, where today you look at the smartphones, actually the phone is increasingly irrelevant, and it's all about on the smart device bit. And I think that's why kind of some of the modern platforms, Android, iOS and Windows Phone, and you can talk about the technologies of which is modern, which is not, and how long a history they have. I'm talking mainly about the UX layers here, you know, why they are better suited than perhaps Symbian is for a lot of people's needs. Now, don't get me wrong, I still think the core OS of Symbian is very competent. I think for a lot of people, it provides exactly what they need. It provides experience they need. They can get things done quickly. But I don't think anyone would deny that the majority of users have moved on kind of to different UX patterns and different usage patterns. And I think a lot of it can be dated to the switch over between non-touch and touchscreen devices.
Yeah, yeah. But by the way, people listening to this, UX is user experience.
Thank you, Steve.
It's rather interesting, Rafe, that I went back digging into the archives for my research and writing this article, and the overlap between S63rd edition devices continuing to be announced and released. I mean, the N86 was, what, 2009?
Yes, I think and that's yet, right.
And that was a good year after of S65th edition, and the Nokia 5800 was announced. So there was a pretty healthy overlap, really. So, you know, as you say, it's not all about having to go from one thing to another. There was really a very different climate and a big healthy overlap period in which Nokia really didn't want to confuse its users.
Yeah, that people kind of forget that these things sort of, you know, touchscreens arrived and suddenly there was the iPhone and the world changed. It didn't happen like that. It took a couple of years. And in hindsight, of course, you can see the writing on the wall. But managing that change is far more difficult than, in one sense, making the change itself. And actually, I think that could be said to be the story of Nokia in general. You know, it got to the situation it was in with, you know, having to switch to Windows Phone, you know, abandoning MeeGo, abandoning Symbian, basically because that change wasn't managed very well. You can look at all sorts of areas to blame, and I don't think there's any one definitive point. You can look at, you know, the legacy of the software, you know, the strength of the engineering teams, the competence or otherwise of the management. But that's not an easy situation. And, you know, I have my personal view is that a lot of these, you know, smart platforms or these smartphone platforms kind of have life cycles that they go through, you know, maybe 6 to 10 years, and they're sort of, you know, they rise, then they fall. And I kind of expect something similar to happen in the future as well. You know, to a certain extent, you can get around this by having, you know, a new version or doing a big update. But implicit in that update is you may well end up breaking things. And if you've got a big installed base, it's not a very attractive thing. Now, you know, go back to that period, and there was enough fuss over the incompatibilities of software between third edition and fifth edition. You know, people say, oh, this app doesn't work, or, you know, this service doesn't work. And that caused a lot of fuss. You know, people really dislike that. It would have been that much worse if, you know, there had been a completely clean break. And, you know, in a sense, you've seen the same thing happen with Windows Phone. So as I say, that transition management is far from straightforward. And so I think people tend to look back and go, what if, without really remembering the difficulties or the context of the situation itself.
One last thing before we finish the podcast and before my voice gives out is to mention that we were doing the grand shootout. This is the HTC One with its, quote, ultra-pixel technology against the Lumia 920 with a PureView Phase 2 and the Nokia 808 running Symbian with the PureView Phase 1. So I'm also going to be throwing in the N95, Ray, from 2007, purely because it's got a roughly similar pixel count and a roughly similar sensor size to the new HTC One. So we're comparing devices that are 7 years apart and yet should have roughly similar performance, not allowing for the fact that things like sensor quality has actually improved in the intervening years. So a four-way shootout should be appearing on the site sometime within 24 hours of you hearing this podcast. So do look out for that.
Yeah, I think with a sneaky preview, having seen some of these devices in operation, I think N95 owners might be pleasantly surprised at just how good their camera is. The other interesting thing about the HTC One is it's got the optical image stabilization in it, which of course is really one of the first to do that apart from the Lumia 920. It's not implemented in the same way, and actually from what I see in the tech specs, it's not as good. So it'll be interesting to see how that comes out in the shootout. In terms of the optical format size, you know, the 920, the 1X, the N95, all about on the par. The 808 will still be ahead, so we're expecting that to, you know, blast competition. That won't really be a surprise. But one of the things it'll be interesting to get Steve's take on, and maybe we'll talk about this in the next podcast, is around the actual camera software on the HTC device, because they're introducing something called Zoe Photos, which is essentially a, when you take a photo, it takes a 3-second video and then takes 15 still photos at the same time, kind of a burst quasi video mode, which I think is interesting because it's essentially introducing a new capture mode in addition to photo and stills. There's also the highlight reels, which takes, you know, photos and videos that you've shot on the phone and does an automatically created kind of highlight video of those photos and videos. So I'm interested to get Steve's take on that, because aside from the hardware quality, which I think is an interesting thing, actually I think we can probably guess at the result of that already. I think innovation in that camera space is a really important one. It's, you know, not something we've seen all that much of. The 808 was kind of notable for having one of, I think, the most, you know, promising camera UIs in terms of, you know, providing a basic mode for users, but then providing an advanced mode for those who wanted to fiddle and do more. You know, that really stands out for me as one of the kind of camera software highlights. But others have been working on, you know, what interesting things can we do. And, you know, we saw some of that on Symbian with kind of filter applications, but obviously that was really big play on the Android and the iOS world, you know, Instagram and things like that. And then on the Windows Phone devices, you've got the Lens apps. I actually think what HTC have come up with here is something that isn't really sacrificing, you know, the image quality, which a lot of these extra apps seem to do, but does come up with a really fresh approach from, you know, how to capture stuff with your smartphone. So maybe we'll get Steve to talk a little bit about that as well, because I know on this podcast we've got a lot of imaging fans, but I think any of you who have invested in 808 can probably not worry too much about the result of this particular shootout.
And bringing that Zoe mentioned back onto Symbian and back on topic, people will remember Harold Meyer's burst camera application. Right. A few weeks ago, and one of the things people noticed it doing, and I found it hard to believe at first, but it seems it's true, is that it doesn't actually take 50 photographs in a second or in 2 seconds. It actually does take a HD movie, and then it processes that into individual frames, individual photos. But basically, there's a very similar thing to what HTC is doing with this new HTC One. So apparently, the Harold's adding that to actually preserve the movie and do something with it to the next version. So I will be reporting back on that, and there's definitely similarities, although of course the HTC implementation is quite a bit slicker, I suspect.
Yes, that's right. But what's, you know, the point here isn't so much, you know, how you do it or what the end results are like. It's, you know, try and do something new with the camera that's beyond just applying a filter or, you know, using it as kind of a sensor to see things, you know, scanning barcodes. Because I think, you know, the idea that it's just about stills and videos does seem, you know, a distraction to me. I mean, that's why the cinemagraph idea on the Windows Phone device kind of was more interesting to me than some of the filter ideas, because the creative elements in capturing something new. And I think the camera phone users, you know, we've got to the point where the quality is, you know, really very good indeed. Even on the standard device, you know, they're like point and shoots. If you're looking at an 808, obviously you're getting something even better. But the 808 is a standard, I think, beyond what most people really need from a camera phone. You know, it's not DSLR quality. You know, you get various comparisons talking about that, but it's certainly high-end point and shoot. And so you kind of wonder what comes next. And so I think there's a place for a discussion around all of that. This is to say, beyond just the kind of the basic filtering and the editing, you know, can we start capturing things in new ways? And I think also bringing in location sensors, you know, something that happened very quietly, but the idea of GPS tagged photos is now common on all smartphones, but not a lot was ever really done with that. So I think there's all sorts of interesting areas around there to talk about. So maybe we'll sort of do some future gazing in a podcast either on the Symbian or on the Windows Phone site. But other than that, thank you very much for listening, and a big thank you for Steve for kind of slogging through the podcast even though he's got a frog in his throat.
Frog and a toad and a lizard,
various other things, and you, the audience, should probably appreciate it. It's been like that for sort of 6 or 7 days now. We kind of put this podcast off, but Steve bravely declared that he couldn't put it off any longer. So big thank you to Steve.
There we are. Well, thank you for listening. Yes, we will catch you in probably in 2 or 3 weeks' time when we gathered some more news and insights and interesting things to talk about. Thanks for listening.